Could Elon Musk create a third political party that gains traction? The world's richest man isn't the first billionaire to challenge the grip America's two major parties have on the nation's political system. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the history of third parties in the U.S., their track record, and Cincinnati's own charter committee are Xavier University political science professor Mac Mariani, charter committee convener Steve Gooden, and New York Times politics reporter Reed Epstein. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Reed, what do we know about Elon Musk's proposal to create this third party?
Well, proposal might be stronger than...
Strong word, okay.
Stronger than what's actually happened. You know, Elon Musk, of course, came into the Trump administration in a pretty powerful role. He was put in charge of cutting large sections of the federal government. And as often happens with President Trump and people with strong opinions of themselves, Musk and Trump had a falling out. He left the White House. He was not happy with the big policy bill that Trump signed earlier this month. And that left Musk sort of muttering to himself on social media about starting a third party. And he has done a little bit more than just tweet about it. He has spoken to some sort of political experts about what it would take to put together a third party and mused privately about different ways to do it. What he hasn't done so far is put together any sort of tangible plan or brought people on staff or spent any money or do any of the things that you would expect someone, even someone of his sort of unlimited means, would have to sort of put together something tangible to start a third-party effort. And none of that has happened yet.
Some kind of structure. You mentioned this very public falling out he had with President Trump. Here's what the president had to say.
I think it's ridiculous to start a third party. We have a tremendous success with the Republican Party, so he can have fun with it.
Anyone here have thoughts on how hard it could be to create a third party that's counter to MAGA? Go ahead,
Matt. Well, you know, so I think that part of the problem here is the basis on which Musk wants to start this party is, you know, frustration with government spending. And as much as government spending and the debt are issues that we ought to pay attention to, they deserve attention, there's really not much evidence that voters are highly motivated on those issues. They talk about them, but at the end of the day, nobody really wants higher taxes on one side, and nobody really wants less spending on the other. And so building a party, a successful party and successful candidates on that basis would be very difficult. The second issue is structural, right? So the way we elect members of Congress is in single-member districts for the most part, except for Maine and Alaska. There's single-member districts with plurality winners, right? And in Maine and Alaska, they have a ranked choice voting sort of system. But that discourages third parties because what happens is, in the case of Musk, if he runs, we're going to cut the deficit candidates, what that ends up doing is splitting the vote on the right. You don't actually elect any of your members. You just elect more Democrats, which, you know, if you're Elon Musk and you want to penalize the Republicans for not playing ball with you or not, you know, acceding to your wishes, maybe that's a good strategy if you want to hurt the Republican Party. But if you want to build a successful third party, it's very unlikely to happen.
Yeah. Reed, how tough is it to create a third party in this country and actually get candidates on the ballot? That the laws differ quite a bit from state to state, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, anybody can create a third party. And like you said, the difficulty and hurdles to getting on the ballot vary widely depending on what part of the country you live in. In Georgia and Illinois, it's particularly difficult. No, there has not been a third party candidate for a congressional seat in Georgia since before World War II. But in other states, it's really quite easy to get on the ballot. I guess the bigger question is, how do you raise money for something like this? Because our elections, for better or worse, are run. They cost a lot of money for candidates to get their name out, to run advertising, to build campaign operations. And how do you generate enough excitement about yourself to peel enough people away from one side or the other or both to become a credible candidate. We have seen, you know, the number of successful examples of this are so few that you can really name them all. Jesse Ventura in 1998 was elected governor of Minnesota. There's been a couple examples in Maine and Oregon. In 2022, there was a third-party candidate who won, I think, 8 to 10% in the governor's race, which was a real high watermark. But you have to have most of the successful versions of these have had a really charismatic candidate on the ballot leading the third party, whether it's Ventura in Minnesota, Ross Perot in the 90s, who did better than any third party presidential candidate since Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party. And what Musk is talking about is not himself running for president because he's of course ineligible, but putting up other candidates. And there's really no precedent for something like that happening in this country of an extremely wealthy person sort of propping up other like-minded candidates to pursue a policy agenda. These things tend to be personality-driven and not policy-driven. Mm.
Steve, you head up what's essentially Cincinnati's third party, and you're one of five candidates for city council the charter committee has endorsed. But it's been a while since Cincinnati City Council had a charterite as a member. Is it getting tougher to win?
Well, we do not have a Jesse Ventura-type candidate here. I'm going to start working out really hard.
I was going to say, don't consider yourself the Jesse Ventura of the Charter Committee?
I'm working on it. Okay. I'll have to take that under advisement, okay. But thank you for that thought. In our view, third parties always ebb and flow, and they're really a sign of discontent. And I think it's sort of ironic that Trump is saying what he's saying about Elon Musk, because I always viewed Donald Trump as essentially a third-party candidate. I mean, really the roots of this sort of current version of America First protectionism stuff go back to Pat Buchanan in 1991-92 when he challenged George Bush, carries through Ross Perot, surfaces again sort of in the Tea Party movement, and then ultimately the Republican Party absorbed it through Trump. So these third-party movements tend to be like bees. You know, once they sting and their poison is out, they go away. Cincinnati's situation is just different. I mean, the Charter Party is just part of the city's DNA. We've been around since 1924. The actual form of government we have, the city manager form of government, is a result of the Charter Party. And it does, it ebbs and flows. Our last representation on council was Liz Keating 2 terms ago.
She was co-endorsed by the Republican Party and the Charter Committee. Okay.
That is correct. But I mean, we've got the history all the way back to Ted Berry, as the first African American mayor, was a Charterite, Jim Tarbell, Roxanne Qualls, and a lot of our ideas, Bobby Stern, absolutely. It's quite a legacy, and we just feel like it is time. We have a situation right now in Columbus where, thanks to redistricting, people don't feel heard. We have a situation in Cincinnati, thanks to the sample ballot and the kind of nationalization of local elections, neighborhoods don't feel heard again. So it's our time again. I mean, Charter is not an ongoing political, ideological movement. It is solely locally focused. And right now, the neighborhoods are crying out for basically feel like that they've been shut out by special interests. So we feel it's a very different time, and it really doesn't match up neatly with the national stuff. I think the Musk stuff is frankly sort of crazy.
We're talking about the history of third political parties in the U.S. and how often they've made a difference in elections. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, nationally create a third party with the national political climate of today that has evolved to be so reactionary, tribal, and polarizing, the chances are remote. Locally, Cincinnati has a strong tradition of political activism for reform that has historically filled the role of an alternative political entity in the form of the Charter Committee. It has served us well in the past and can do so again in the future. At the end of the day, everyone needs to be informed and simply go to the polls and vote. Mac, you want to add something?
Well, yeah, I think that one of the challenges that I think that at the local level, and Steve talked about the sort of nationalization of politics at the local level, and the fact that you know, the Democratic Party name and the sample ballot means more at a time when people are sort of hyper-polarized. And one of the challenges, I think, is that notwithstanding this program and the Cincinnati Inquirer and other things, there's fewer and fewer people paying attention to local news. Like, local news is getting sort of pushed out by a constant, steady stream of national news and information. And so it's very difficult, I think, one, for local candidates to sort of break out as sort of like a local figure who's like, hey, that person has some really good ideas. I might not be part of their party. They might be an independent or a charter candidate, but I want to give them a chance because they've got good ideas. But the ability to sort of break into the news and information cycle for most Cincinnati residents and you know, people all across the country, it's just been diminished by the fact that we're just sort of just drowning in national information. And that's another piece to this.
Reed, you know, Mac mentioned ranked choice voting earlier. Is that something that could give third party candidates a better chance in these elections? I mean, do you think it's the system that we use to elect candidates that works against third party candidates across the country?
Well, the system certainly isn't helpful. You know, when I was talking to people last week about what the Elon Musk situation, I talked to a guy, Nick Troiano, who tried to start sort of a centrist third party 10 years ago, and they went from 2014 to after the 2018 elections, at which point he determined that that was really a fool's errand and shifted all of his organization's effort toward kind of what you're talking about, towards electoral reform, getting ballot initiatives in front of voters for things like, you know, open primaries and then the top two or three candidates advance to a general election, or ranked choice voting, or things that change the structure of the voting, because we're not going to end the sort of the winner-take-all nature of our congressional elections, because that's sort of inherent in the Constitution. But there are different ways of choosing those winners, the winners of those elections, and Alaska and Maine have tried this different experiment. We've seen in both of those states a little bit less focus on the candidates of the extremes of the parties. That's not necessarily been the case in California, which also has a sort of an open primary where everyone competes and the top two candidates advance to the general election. It hasn't necessarily moderated the candidates there. So it does depend on you know, the makeup of the voters in the state or districts that we're talking about for some of these different types of elections.
We will continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll talk about new aerial imaging technology in Kentucky and how emergency crews could use it after natural disasters. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about third parties in American politics. My guests are Xavier University political science professor Mac Mariani, Charter Committee convener Steve Gooden, and New York Times politics reporter Reed Epstein. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. Steve, you talked about this a little bit, but I want to dig in a little bit deeper about how difficult it can be for anyone to win a seat on Cincinnati City Council with the strength of the local Democratic Party, especially candidates who've been endorsed by the Hamilton County Democratic Party. What makes it so hard for candidates who aren't endorsed by the Democratic Party to win?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, the national environment is powerful right now. And that's one of the reasons, frankly, the Charter Party took a step back in the last election cycle. We knew that that cycle was going to largely be defined by the reproductive rights amendment that was on the statewide ballot. And it absolutely did change voter turnout and voter behavior. And we thought it was going to be very, very difficult to break through there. And might I note also, the Charter Party is primarily composed of Democrats. I mean, it's what we used to call blue dog Democrats, who are kind of more perhaps fiscally conservative and locally focused. So, you know, the Charter Party has ebbed and flowed over the years by design. There are times when we feel like the parties are taking up our issues. This is a year, however, we think it's very, very different, where there are some very, very unique neighborhood concerns that are kind of finally coming to the fore. And I've said this, you know, before, it's like if we were in a very in a different media market, this would be the kind of situation where the police chief would probably have been fired. It would be a first page, front page news every day talking about our uptick in crime, our city manager's response to snow removal and infrastructure repair. Her job would be on the line if this were New York or Chicago, where there's kind of a more robust local news market. So that's what we're hearing in the neighborhoods, and we think this is a year where folks are going to be willing to look away from the statewide issues and Trump and really focus here. I mean, everything we hear from City Hall right now is, you know, we have an uptick in violence, it's Trump's fault. We have an uptick in violence, it's DeWine's fault. Well, there's a point where the neighborhoods want there to be a local, thoughtful, and considered response. And I just don't think those national deflections are selling anymore. So that's really why we think this is a year where it's very different. And we're going to organize in a very, very, very different way. We're not running against city council. We're running against the sample ballot and the people that control the sample ballot, which are lawyers and lobbyists and special interests. So, I mean, we know very much what we're up against this year, but we think it's a very different year.
Okay, we do have a couple callers on the line. Hey, Bob, thanks for calling. What's your comment?
Well, I just wanted to remark that when East and West Germany reunited, the International Visitors Bureau here in Cincinnati sponsored a visit from former East German politicians from various sections of East Germany, and they came to Cincinnati specifically because we had three viable political parties. And part of the tour included over the Rhine and remnants there were of German culture. But it was a very enthusiastic group of politicians from East Germany.
Well, that's fascinating. Thanks so much, Bob. We appreciate your listening. Appreciate that comment. That's really interesting to hear. We also have Nancy on the line. Hi, Nancy. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My comment would be to the panel that it seems we have an ever-growing population of independent voters in the country, especially among younger voters. So would this not be a good time to try to create third party?
Interesting. Thanks so much, Nancy. What do you think, Mac?
Well, I think one of the challenges is that I think there is generally people don't like political parties. They sort of recognize the limitations of the parties. But a lot of people who, and a lot of the research shows that a good number of the people who declare themselves independents are actually partisan in some way. Like, you know, you could be like, I'm independent and it feels good. But if you're always voting for Republicans or always voting for Democrats, you're really, you know, you're what we'd call a leaner, independent-leaning Republican, independent-leaning Democrat. But so many of the independents are not pure independents. And that makes it very difficult. I think the other factor that you run into with when it comes to turnout in local elections is relatively small. I mean, we hit about 40% in 23, but that was sort of an exception to the rule. I mean, we're typically 25-30% in those local city council elections, even when the mayors are on the ballot, and that makes it difficult. And independents tend to be less likely to show up, and they tend to be the sort of people who sometimes they're independent because they're not political, right? I'm an independent because I don't follow politics, I don't vote. And so the challenge would be then how do you find those pure independents who are actually engaged to vote, actually truly independent? How do you make sure that they show up? That's a tough pull.
Yeah. Reid, you know, the most prominent third party candidates in my lifetime have for at the national level at least have been Ralph Nader and before him Ross Perot.
If Bush understood money, he never would have run off a $4 trillion debt.
I don't know how familiar that voice sounds to a lot of our listeners. Reid, what's the third-party track record at the national level? You were talking about some mayors, some candidates in other states who have won. What about at the national level?
Well, nobody since Ross Perot in 92 and 96 has gotten any sort of real traction and been part of a conversation for a presidential race. You know, the Libertarians always put someone on the ballot for president. The Green Party in recent years has been on the ballot in a bunch of states. And there are other sort of minor figures who get on the ballot in places where it's easy to get on the ballot. But nobody since Ross Perot has come close to winning a state. And nobody has won a state really since George Wallace in the 60s. And so it is very difficult. We are not going to have a sort of parliamentary style system where you have a bunch of different candidates and they have to form a coalition government. It's just not the way that the American system is set up. And so unless you have somebody who's capable of winning states and taking electoral votes, it's going to be a while before there's a viable third-party candidate on the national stage.
Mac, you wrote that Elon Musk might have more luck if he targets primary races. Explain why you think that is.
Well, and I think this is a point that Steve made, that there was – when you look at Donald Trump's rise in the Republican Party, you know, he's a very unconventional Republican and to some extent maybe not a Republican at all. And rather than running a third-party run, which is sort of doomed to failure because of the factors we talked about, he decided to run in a primary. And that seems to be an alternative path, right? And so you can imagine if you're Elon Musk and you've got the deepest pockets that we've ever seen. I mean, he makes Ross Perot look poor. And if you can use your money to leverage primary battles for American Party Republicans, quote unquote, to, you know, win a primary seat here, win a primary seat there, then you've got some real leverage, you know, to change the party, to move the Republican Party towards your issues. I think he'd be much more likely to succeed if he did it within the party system. Those primaries, similar as we talked about local elections, primary elections are even lower attended elections in terms of participation. So you don't need to move that many voters to actually make a difference. And when you've got deep pockets, you can, you know, maybe find not the sometimes independents, but more so Republicans who are dissatisfied with the state of spending. And that might be possible.
And we have seen some of that in the Democratic Party, and we've seen the Democratic Socialists back candidates in Democratic primaries. We've seen more progressive Democrats in some cases oust incumbents or win primaries. We saw it in the New York City mayor's race last month. And so there is a template for this sort of thing happening within one of the two parties.
Steve, I know we're talking to you about local issues, but I know you're also following these national issues and politics very closely. Do you think these third-party candidates at a national level are just destined to be spoilers?
In all likelihood, Lucy, I mean, at the national level, what they run into every time is the Electoral College. I don't think there's been I mean, even Ross Perot, who got the high water mark at roughly 20% of the vote, did not get any electoral votes. I think there hasn't been a third-party national candidate to get Electoral College representation since George Wallace in 68. So it is a very, very tough thing to do. But I will say that I think the third parties are going to continue to surface. There's a lot of discontent because people don't feel represented. They don't feel that the Biden-Harris – there's a lot of folks on the left that felt the Biden-Harris team didn't really speak to them. There's a lot of folks kind of center-right that feel the Trump MAGA movement doesn't speak to them. There are people who are feeling kind of lost and homeless right now. But I would note, back to Mac's point, that the parties right now, in my mind, are very weak. I think because of social media, because of the ability of people to organize digitally right now, primary challenges are really going to be the way to go. We saw that in New York. And really, Trump was the function of that. I mean, people forget the Republican Party on the national level was pretty demoralized after the Romney loss. It was pretty empty. And Trump marched right in and without any real party, traditional party apparatus or support, and won the nomination three times. So, the party, I think the fact that the parties cannot out-organize or mandate candidates anymore in the social media age, I think means a lot of at the national level, the third parties are going to end up being in these primaries.
Reid, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but do you think Elon Musk might end up deciding to try to work within the system instead of, you know, backing a third party?
I would not bet even a light lunch on what Elon Musk might do next. I think it is at the whims of whatever social media posts he reads. And, I, you know, we could be having this conversation in a month and have any, it could have gone in any number of directions, which I will choose not to predict.
Well, that sounds like a smart answer. I've been talking with Xavier University political science professor Mac Mariani, Charter Committee convener Steve Gooden, and New York Times politics reporter Reid Epstein. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear about new technology in Kentucky and how it could be used for rescue and recovery efforts. This is Cincinnati Edition.